Labardius, have you ever had fried chicken at 6:47 in the morning?
The answer to that is absolutely not.
Well,
I recommend it.
But I will say this. That smell is about as glorious a smell when it's right as you could ever find.
It's not going to be pleasant for whoever comes in this room after us.
No, it isn't.
Because it's everywhere, and it is quite a fiesta in here. There's gravy and potatoes.
Biscuits.
Yep.
Yeah, there's stuff all over from... Because it doesn't eat that well. It's not clean. It's all over the place.
It's best to be done outside, really.
No, without a doubt. Without a doubt, and I'm not sure about whether the bones are okay to leave out there in this day and age. Here, there's absolutely no doubt. Yeah. Just like head to some, well, I don't know. You don't want to eat it on the train tracks over there. That's not a good idea. Maybe in that park, right in that little park there.
Peter Labardius is with the Flames in Denver. Game 3 tonight at the Pepsi Center. You, of course, morning skate, traveling, being around the team. Give us the mood after the OT loss from Saturday.
Well, I think it was one of understanding that they're truly now in a series. And the sense that I had yesterday around the group, no practice, just, you know, arrive at the charter terminal and then eventually... It was a very quiet airplane ride. There's no question for that. And I think, you know, it was a team that certainly understood that they did not bring their best, by and large, in any way, shape, or form on Saturday night. They weren't good enough. They know it. They understand now truly, I think, the challenge that they're facing. And it's time to get back to work.
What did you make of the effort on Saturday? Because clearly the Colorado Avalanche were much better, to the point there you saw why they were able to claw their way back into the postseason picture. Do you feel that's something that they can sustain four or five more games? And B, like I said, what did you see from the Flames? Because they certainly did not play their best either.
No, they didn't. I mean, I think, first of all, Boom, you have to give a lot of credit to the Avalanche, led by Nathan MacKinnon, who you could just see... You know, that was a true world-class performance by a world-class player. That's as dominant an effort as you can have in a hockey game. He and Rantanen, I thought, were just absolutely spectacular, despite the fact that MacKinnon only ends up with a 1 point in the game. He was dangerous every time he had it. You thought something good could happen for the Avalanche. They played with terrific pace in their game. Their urgency level was high, and I know that even head coach Jared Bednar talked coming out of game one on Saturday morning about he really liked how his team defended the Flames, but he thought offensively they were stagnant, that they didn't move their feet and really play with the type of pace that they're accustomed to, that made them successful down the stretch, that got them into the dance to begin with. Well, that was not an issue whatsoever. I, to be honest, when I've watched that team and watched these two teams play, and it just again shows you that the playoffs is it's a completely different species, plain and simple. Throw the regular season right down, what, you know, throw it with the bones out in the park, because that's how much it applies once you get rolling at this time of year. And as far as the Flames are concerned, thought they were pretty good in game one. Mike Smith has been by far and away their best player in the first two games, which, you know, in one way is fabulous. In another way, it's not a trend that continues favorably if the Flames are to win. And for my money, gents, I never thought the Flames got to their game until the start of overtime. They were not themselves. They didn't get through the neutral zone with any transition. They barely had the puck all night long. That was not the Flames. And then in overtime, I thought they got to their game and were pretty good. But one outstanding transition attack, people don't focus on it very much. That's a heck of a chance, boys, that Michael Frolik has just seconds before to win the game. So I like them in overtime. really didn't like them a whole lot, to be frank, for 60 minutes.
Lots of talk about, obviously, Colorado's top line and how the Flames try and match it up with the last change at home. Is this something Bednar is going to be doing against our top line? Because if they are, if he's not worried about our top line, isn't that saying a lot?
Red, who's the top line?
Well, that's...
Yeah. Like, and I, and you know, my yes. friend, the respect I have for you, I'm not trying to be sarcastic whatsoever. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, if you're talking, and I know, needless to say, that line, I've liked Lindholm. I think he's been engaged. I think he's been physical. I think he's been responsible. You know, you have to tip your cap, but this isn't a new story. That line just hasn't been anywhere near as dangerous for the better part of 2 months. Now, that's why I love this time of year, because this time of year, and Rhett, you forgot more than any of us could ever know about what it's like to play at this time of year, and I love to defer to you at this time, but isn't this the time of the year that's the great separator? This is, to me, when it's really hard, and in life, when it's really hard, you've got to fight through. And, you know, I don't think they've played poorly. Game one, I thought they did a really nice job. Whether you want to start there, and it's a pretty good place to start, the Calgary Flames, if I'll put it to you in this statement, which team in game two looked like a number one seed and which team looked like a number eight seed?
Well, and it was the complete flip-flop from game one, because it seemed clear that night who was the one seed and who was the eighth seed?
Well, and Boom, I thought game one was a lot more even, to be honest. But what I saw in game number one was the Flames have the better depth in this series. And when they have an ability to get to their depth, then I like their chances. They didn't establish their game. You know, really, when you think about big sporting events and these kind of showdowns, which team dictates the way the game needs to be played? Calgary needs to dictate. They need to move the puck. They need to play faster. They need to play with more desperation, and I think they will. You know, this was a matchup going in, frankly, that everybody loved and, you know, thought it was the most favorable. And what happened in game two? Well, one team turned it up a couple of notches, led by their world-class guys, and the Flames didn't have an answer. But it's one night. So like I said, right off the top, get back to work, show the world why you won 50 times during the regular season, be more engaged. You're not going to have the ability to match the way that you want to match. And play to your identity. I even in game one, guys, I thought they were good, but I don't think we've seen anywhere near the best of the Calgary Flames in this series. Maybe for about 25 minutes.
Chatting with Peter Labardius, he is in Denver, readying for game number three tonight, Flames and Avalanche. We saw Rasmus Anderson move into that top pair with Mark Giordano on Saturday night. How close are we to seeing that on a more full-time basis? TJ Brody, tough night.
I won't be surprised if it starts that way. Rasmus Anderson by far has been the most pleasant surprise for this hockey team all year. And I thought that he handled Saturday very well. He thinks it so well, competes, has great poise. You know, to a certain degree, maybe against this team, against McKinnon, so you really have to start and not finish there, but I mean, he drives that bus in a big way, can be about pace. But I love his poise. He's competitive. He can be hard to play with. It gives you a righty-lefty combination in your first pair, which I think, you know, can make things easier. Some people think it's overplayed. I think you'd love to have lefty-righty down your lineup when it works and the matchup is okay. It's really difficult to say, guys. You know, Bill talked in part about the potential of changes. I won't be surprised if we see more of it for sure. Now, whether Bill Peters goes to his group yesterday and today and says, with our lineup, I'm giving you one more chance to be you and basically roll the same lineup out and see what he ends up with. But I know one thing. Won't be shocked if he starts with Anderson there, and he'll go to it really early if he senses that it's not the right combo again to begin.
When or what would the circumstance or situation be where we might see Valimaki or Stone draw in?
Well, I've thought about the Valimaki factor for the last 2 days. Listen, he joined the main group in practice on Friday. I thought that was, you know, something that I found interesting. His poise, his speed. But guys, he has not played very much NHL hockey. You know, he played in those 3 games down the stretch, but were those nights that you could really properly evaluate because the Flames were resting people? I think, wouldn't you guys say it's fair that their mindset, it's hard to be where you need to be when you've clinched everything. It was great to get him into a few games. I think, you know, with his pedigree and his poise, he's an excellent skater. He can think it. It wouldn't shock me. I just wonder if he's played enough and been around it enough to throw him into the battle right now.
Well, you feel like that would have been a good thing to do at home when you can control your matchups.
Yeah, more so, for sure. Absolutely.
They are thinking about throwing a kid into Colorado's defense.
They are. His name is Cale Makar, and he's from Calgary, and he just won the Hobie Baker Award. I don't like to compare people, guys, very often, but in terms of offensive attributes, I see some Erik Karlsson there and his ability to skate and read it and see it and make plays, get up on the rush. You know, I'm one of those crazy guys who can tell you that I watched him a little bit in Bantam and certainly in Midget, and had my fair share of viewings when he was in the Alberta Junior Hockey League in Brooks. His progression from the first time I saw him at 13 to in his last year at Brooks was probably, you know, as high a ceiling from start to finish in that 5 or 6 years as almost any young kid that I've seen. Plays with great passion. You know, I just tell you a quick story. I hadn't seen him for 2 years, went to the rink, went to Father David Bauer, was dying to see him in his draft year. First shift against the Calgary Mustangs, 30 seconds in, looks a guy off, wheels inside the near post, goes up the ice, beats 2 guys, walks through the middle of the defense, rings one off the crossbar. And I'm like, well, you know what? It's been a busy week. I can go home. I've seen enough here.
Yeah.
You know, there is high offensive upside. Saw some of it, needless to say, in his appearance at the World Junior, where he had 8 points. But the interesting thing, when you think about what happened in his 1 year at the World Junior, in defensive situations down the stretch, I mean, that was one of the stories. His utilization wasn't what some people thought that it could have been, or in some cases should have been. But I know what happened in those games, and they're a lot like these games. Your ability to be able to defend people matters. Now, he might draw in tonight in some role. It's a lot to ask. I mean, Red, I'm going to ask you. So you have this new hot shot. Everybody's talking about him. He enters. Imagine the pressure and emotion. This is a kid who grew up loving the Flames in the playoffs, won the Hobie Baker. His regular team, UMass, just lost the title game to Minnesota Duluth on Saturday night. The last time I checked, that's a lot on a kid, you know, in 72 or 4 days.
That's why kids are great. Because I think, and you're right, it is a lot. But the arrogance and confidence in kids is so staggering that put them in there. Honestly,
put him in there.
I think he'd be riding high. I mean, it's your dream to play in the NHL. Great that it's against the Calgary Flames. Jerome Iginla, would have been an overwhelming situation for him to step in. Well, what happened when he did? And it's not always going to, maybe he doesn't turn into a Hall of Famer, but man, I just think that kids with all that excitement, they're trained so well, they're in such good shape, their skill level is so different than hacks coming up in the 90s, but I think put him in there, I'll bet you he plays well.
Okay, so here's a question for you. Now, Samuel Girard, who suffered in a collision with Sam Bennett late in the game the other day, looked to be some form of shoulder. Now it's up in the air whether he plays tonight. How are you feeling if you're the other people in the group? How would those guys feel, you know, if you're the number six or number seven or number eight defenseman that they're carrying and you're part of a group that's worked your tail off to get here, and this young whippersnapper, that's an old term for you millennial types, comes waltzing in and has everything, is any effect there? Or are they just saying this is a really good guy who gives us a better chance?
Lubo,
potentially gives you a better chance.
I think that it all depends on the team, but you know as well as I do that any good team leaves their ego at the door and they welcome a guy in. My love affair with Dion Phaneuf is
well documented.
I was so mad at Dion Phaneuf when he wouldn't play for us in the Stanley Cup Finals that it soured my point being, Dion Phaneuf could have come in and helped us win. I'm all for it. There was no one going to be ruffled feathers, and I think that probably it's the same in Colorado. If you got a kid that's coming in, he's going to be that good. He's going to take a job anyway next year, by the sounds of it. If he can come in and help our team win, absolutely, wide open.
My favorite thing about what you said, and I really believe in it, being around forever, high-end kids of today, they're different. I think in certain cases, not all, because I would refuse to paint everybody with the same brush, because of how they're programmed and how they're wired, depending on the individual, I'm not sure the stage feels quite as big as it would to someone like you, Red, in your day.
Oh, there's no question, guys. Yeah, guys.
I don't think.
And you look around, Miro Heiskanen, he's 19, had a pair of goals. He's been great.
Oh, he's awesome. He's a superstar, that guy.
Yeah. I mean, Cale Makar at 20, he's been playing college. He's been the best player on his team, just went to the Frozen Four.
I mean, the list is too long of kids stepping in and doing well. Just on a personal note, Florida Panthers. They had Jovanovski. He'd played all year, and he was a number one. But, I mean, we started the playoffs with two or three kids that were young. Look at Calgary. Rasmus Anderson never played it. Playoff game. Yeah, he'd been there all year and he kind of got, but the playoffs a whole different. I don't think kids nowadays that get put in if there is any question. And I don't think any of the kids that have a chance are set up for failure. I think they're so good that they know deep down. And you know what? A good player wants that challenge.
Yeah, player always wants that challenge. But you haven't had one practice with your group.
Perfect. Honestly, don't think. How many guys have showed up late, last minute? Just go skate. Don't. Some of the worst thing you can do is stop and think about it for a while. Get in your own head.
I believe that.
Get out there and go.
I believe that. Yeah, I believe that. But I will also say this. There's. Again, it's one thing to play. It's one thing to think that this kid's going to come in and run the show.
Yeah.
Because that's to be honest, that's completely disrespectful. This is the hardest time of the year, and it's a hard league. Now, can he come in and play? Sure. And maybe even on night number one, the adrenaline of everything that, you know, you're going through is going to carry you. But, you know, if you even liken it to a few years back when Johnny came in a very same situation, well, he came in game 82 against the Vancouver Canucks. This is game 3 of a Stanley Cup playoff series. We're going to see. I've been watching this kid for a long time, and honestly, it's going to happen, and I can't wait to see how he does.
We're talking about Cale Makar, the Calgary kid who just got out of UMass and the Frozen Four, signed his contract. He can play as early as tonight. You'll remember, because you do, what was the Charlie McAvoy situation? Because wasn't it similar? Was Boston not in the crunch when he came in and fit right in?
It was similar. And he's, you know, I mean, he's a special kid and was a special kid. You know, I probably feel in some ways like I have a bit of a better handle in some regards on McAvoy, just because I feel like I've seen him in more big situations. And again, it's not any complete form of bias. I just think how I see games played in college doesn't always emulate all the time how the game is played, you know, at this level.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's more of a flow game. You play, you know, on the weekends. And I'm not disparaging anyone or the choices they make. This guy's a terrific hockey player. Terrific. All I know is at crunch time a couple years ago, they weren't comfortable down the stretch with big minutes at the World Junior. And I know why that was. It's your ability to defend people. But as Rhett said, flying high, I know he can make the plays and skate and do. I know that. This is a high-end offensive attribute player. So, you know, let's see.
Thanks, Lou, as always. Appreciate it. We'll maybe do it again. We'll do it again tomorrow. We'll have a game to talk
okay.
about.
Sounds all right, good. Let's dial it in. Let's get after it.
Perfect.
Okay, guys, have a great one.
There you go.
And be careful with those bones.
Yeah, don't want to choke on them.
No, don't
be no good. Thanks, Lou.
Bye, guys.
Peter Labardius in Denver.